What the fuck were you thinking? Did you actually think that that was going to work? Your cute little gambling pod? What the fuck did you think you could do without me? You can't do anything without me. You're the one with all the professional recording experience. Mister, I worked in studios. You can't do numbers without me. You never do numbers without me. I could take anybody off the street and do this. I could take Chris Manning. I could take
Justin.
What?
We're recording.
Well, at least I won't have to call Rachel Nichols.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. We got a special Cavs season preview edition of the podcast today. This is actually part two. Part one was featured on Locked On Cavs with our very special guest, Chris Manning. But before we get to him, we get to my berated co-host, the Todd father himself, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Going good, Justin. Getting ready for what's going to be an interesting Cavs season, if nothing else. We just finished part one of this crossover pod, a little home and home with our good friend and fearless Fear the Sword leader, Chris Manning. So, I'm feeling good. I mean, I'm getting excited. It's been kind of a whirlwind in my personal life and professional life, getting ready for a big convention in L.A. So I haven't really had time to like really come to grips with the fact that the NBA is already back, but here we are.
And as we've both alluded to, we have a special guest today, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs, and also, very importantly, our boss of Fear the Sword. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good. I, like Carter, am not quite ready for basketball. I've not processed it yet, and I have not had the time to properly dose up on caffeine, so it's going to be good, but I'm ready. I'm ready. And I'm ready just to just rip off the Band-Aid and be back in the flow.
What do you prefer to start your morning with? Do you prefer to start your morning with coffee or with Jetty Osman highlights?
Jetty Osman highlights. Nothing gets the juices flowing more than some like grainy video of him throwing long court, full court passes playing for the Turkish national team this summer. No question.
See, like I've tried taking in Jetty highlights every morning, but like I got like nasal infections and stuff like that. It's been a whole hassle. Let's kick things off with Jetty though, because that seems to be, as we talked about in part one, that seems to be a thing that Cavs fans are very excited about, but I don't know how excited the rest of the NBA world is. What's a realistic expectation for Jetty for you, Chris? Because Carter and I have kind of talked about this before in the past, but I want to get your take on what you think he can be.
I think this year, in his first real NBA year, because basically last year, I think the rep people saw of him was he came in and he played really hard and like was in there for maybe 5 minutes at a time. That was his rep. I think what I would expect from him is a really fun year with a lot of mistakes. I expect him to go for things, throwing full court passes, leading the offense and taking pull up threes and just doing a lot of the things that we've seen him do with the Turkish national team, but doing it against better competition and then doing it in a way that like just sees him make a lot of mistakes. I expect him to have games where he looks fantastic, but then I expect him to have a lot of games where he looks really bad and just looks, you know, misses a lot of threes and makes some just silly passes and stuff like that. I also think it's really interesting that they're basically, without saying it, I mean, well, Ty has said it, but they're basically going to be asking to defend the best wing every night. And I have no expectation for what that really looks like. I in my mind, he's a big two that's going to be playing the three this year. So, like, how is he going to handle defending Kawhi, defending LeBron, defending Kevin Durant, defending, like, Tatum and Hayward and all these guys on Boston?
I thought you were just talking about his workout this summer.
Yeah, right. Just ran through those guys in the summer. He's ready to go. Defending Ben Simmons, you know? Like, there's going to be asked a lot of him. I think you're going to see a lot of positives, but we'll see sort of the natural struggles. And I think that's fine. I think that is, and I think people, when that happens, I think this year, at the very least, we're going to have a better idea of what he is in the NBA, because I think he's been a hype dream for a lot of us and someone that we're very invested in emotionally. But I don't think we know exactly yet, but I think this year we get actually a better idea of what he is as an NBA player.
No, I think that's fair. I thought the Raptors brought in Kawhi so that they had someone to defend Jetty, but I guess it also works the other way. That
yeah, the Celtics stacked up on wings because they need to match Jetty. Like, that's what this is all really all about.
Are either of you concerned about foul problems with Jetty? Because I think that would kind of be the one thing that could be a bit of a bummer, especially if he is guarding the opposing team's best wing.
I guess. I don't know, but I'm kind of fine with them. Like, that's the nice thing about not expecting to win the title, right? Like, you don't have to worry about it that much. It's like, is he getting good reps in? Is he developing? Is he, you know, is that part of his game as a stopper? Because, like, you know, it's funny. He's probably a better team defender than an individual defender right now. He definitely has a lot of juice as an individual defender because, you know, he has long arms and he tries really hard, and you're not just going to beat him on effort, but he also has a lot of filling out to do still. I think we all remember when Ben Simmons just took his ass to the post like six straight possessions and scored, and that's a fellow rookie. Quotation marks, rookie. But that kind of stuff matters, especially if he's going to be playing the three and not the two. And you know, even though Chris probably correctly says he's an undersized or an oversized two, in today's NBA, he's just a three. You don't need to play a guy like Jetty Osman at the two when he can play up. And he definitely can play up and should be playing up given his size and the fact that he's young. He can still put on muscle on that frame. So I'm not super worried about that, but I am worried about his actual lockdown ability. I think I worry that the Cavs are in for the kind of thing where Alonzo G was their lockdown defender.
Shouts to Alonzo, man. Secure in the bag just for like as long as he did. Shouts to that guy.
David Nwaba is totally going to be the Alonzo G here, right?
Oh, I feel like he could be better than that, but that could just
be... No, he's going to be better, but that's going to be his role. That's what he's going to end up
being. I mean, he's not in the rotation right now.
There was a stretch where we loved Alonzo G, I would like to say. Like,
he's
we
not at least Earl liked Clark.
It. Yeah, the 3G service was pretty great. It was a fun experience, and I'm kind of like looking forward to finding out exactly who that player is going to be for this era. I think Nwaba is certainly a candidate of like kind of end of bench guy that ends up being a fan favorite. Although I feel like everybody kind of has him on their radar already.
Well, everyone being losers like us.
Right.
I think 98% of Cavs fans have never heard of David Nwaba. And I think they're going to really like what they see. I've been really impressed, and I know this is a Jetty conversation, but Nwaba's brought up, so let's just roll with it. Like, I've been really impressed by his capacity to finish. Like, he's a little bit more, you know, there are guys that kind of go up there without a plan. I think of Deion Waiters. like, they can get there, but they don't really have – they're not particularly graceful once they get close to the rim as a finisher. He's had a few tricks in his bag that he's shown that I didn't really see, but he's going to have to be able to do that because I think the jumper is probably never going to be there all the way.
Nope.
No. So he's going to have to be a really effective cutter. And this is a team that's kind of getting comprised of, conceivably effective cutters that we're not actually sure are effective cutters yet. But they're going to need that, especially if they're going to build an offense around Kevin Love and at the elbow.
I mean, but are they building an offense around Kevin Love at the elbow? Like, I don't know if we...
That's a great point.
Like, Kevin, like, basically in the preseason, based on the very limited time we saw of them, like, playing with actual players, they're just going to play really fast and, like, let various people dribble up the ball, and they're just going to get into various sets. I don't get the vibe that we're going to see a lot of, like, Kevin Love at the elbow with guys moving and cutting around him and then playing methodical. I think they're just going to play fast and, like, see what happens, which is, like, fun, but also, like, oh, my God, Jordan Clarkson's going to take 30 bajillion pull-up threes this year, and things are going to, like, stall out if no one's hitting shots.
That's 41% shooting from three, Jordan Clarkson, to you.
Quote, one of the best bench scorers in the league.
Listen, we know he can put up points on a bad team and like borderline efficiently. Like, I don't think that's the issue. It's just that nobody else touches the ball when he's out there. But I actually think that like if you just ran Kevin Love high post, I think this team has guys that are let's call it one-dimensional, or that they just don't have a lot of different looks that they can give. And I think that could actually lead to a lot of stagnant offense. Like, I think that having a lot of movement and trying to disguise what they're doing and playing fast might be the more effective way to go. But Chris, I'm going to throw it back to you. How much is how the Cavs use Kevin Love kind of going to be a barometer of how you feel about Tyronn Lue this year?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I would, if on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to say like a 6, because I want to see him use Kevin Love, because if you're going to pay Kevin Love the contract that they signed him to and make him like your focal point and talk him up as your focal point, you better use him in a way that gets him like averaging over, like, I'm not expecting like 26 and 12 ever again. I think that's unrealistic, but like 20 and 10 doesn't seem unfathomable to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and especially like where you're in a position where the two guys that you should be the most invested in developing, Jetty Osman and Colin Sexton, those guys I think need support and structure. We need to see Sexton play minutes with Kevin Love. Like, we've seen, I don't know exactly, but there's been like very little of that in preseason, if any. I think you really need to see them like playing together. I think you need to see them like learning how to play off of a guy like Kevin Love and having the support system there. Like, it doesn't need to be like an 82 game thing. We talked about this on the first one, but like, if they can just get enough minutes where they're learning off of him, I think that's important. And then you turn it over. And again, like, I think if Kevin Love just is the one guy on the team that has the potential this season to make up for other weaknesses on the team, I just don't know what else you do to build a good offense if he's not your focal point. Like, I don't think there's really a path to them being like necessarily good on either end of the ball, but I feel more confident in them figuring it out on offense just because Kevin Love is very, very good and should be an all-star caliber player this year. That's the only thing like that makes sense to me about this team right now.
What matters to you more, Justin? Whether Kevin Love gets his numbers or how Kevin Love gets his numbers?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I'm not, I hear a lot of people, Chris included, like just being like, okay, yeah, 19, 20 points per game. I don't think that's necessarily like that outlandish. Like, I think we're probably going to see like 21, 22. I mean, Chris Middleton scored 20 points per game last year. Like, I don't think that's like that unachievable. How he gets his points, that actually doesn't interest me as much as him getting consistent touches.
Couldn't agree more, man. I don't care if they're using him on the elbow. I just care that he's producing.
I care how everyone else scores. Like, I care about how they use Kevin Love to open up opportunities for other guys. Because like Rodney Hood, how are they going to use Kevin Love as a distraction? Are they going to use guys off ball? Is Colin Sexton going to get some easy backdoor opportunities? Is there going to be back screens? Like, I don't think there's necessarily one way you have to play Kevin Love. He's clearly a different player physically than he was in Minnesota. And I think asking him to completely reinvent his game when he just put up the most efficient season of his career, I don't think that's completely necessary. I think you can better accentuate what his strengths are at this stage of his career and just kind of go from there.
I think that's really fair. And I think the other thing with him is, like, I kind of want to see if he can evolve in some way, right? Like, you saw some of the one thing that will be the most jarring thing for me in preseason was him dribbling the ball up the floor in like that first preseason game. Like, I kind of want to see him just like do stuff like that. I just want
to
see what happens.
That's a great way to put it. Just, I want to see him try stuff. And like, it's not always going to work. And like, you know what? Like, I'm actually like cool with him like having slightly inefficient shooting games. If the shots are coming from interesting places and he's trying interesting things, you know, I always think of that quote David Griffin gave our newly reinstated Fear the Sword friend, David Zavac, about, you know, when you have LeBron on your team, you have to be really careful about who gets to have the ball or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but like as a result, like Kevin Love, like just didn't get to like flex his way into rhythm, you know, like, all of his shots had to be good shots. You don't get to face up and try to bank from 17 away on the left elbow. You know, like, and you shouldn't, to be clear. Like, you know, people always complain about LeBron taking away from Kevin Love's game, but it's like, listen, offense worked just fine to me. But yeah, now that you have that flexibility, I think it's going to be fun to get to see Kevin Love, you know, operate as a cutter, operate as a shooter, take a pull-up three after dribbling it up in transition because and looking off a defender, you know, like, right. I think that'll be really fun. But and that's ultimately why I don't really care how they use him as long as he's getting enough opportunity to get to his numbers. So
yeah,
normally I am all about process over results. With Love, I'm results over process.
Yeah, well, especially as someone that just drafted him on his fantasy team yesterday, I'm very
don't okay be that with guy, that. Justin.
You know I'm that guy. You after this long, you shouldn't just stop telling me to not be that guy and just embrace the person that I am. Just yeah, like people Justin just stop just telling
me. Yeah, Justin's just wearing his basketball jersey to the draft with all his friends.
Man, I'm going to a watch party for the season opener, and I'm going to be in a Jetty jersey, and my dog's going to be in a jersey. So don't hate on us, Carter. All I want is that if Kevin Love is like one basket away from like tying a first quarter record, that someone gets him the ball. Like that's what I want. That's what I want from this era of Kevin Love.
He also better throw just like a bajillion full court passes. I just want to see like him and Jetty like engage in a passive aggressive like wild pass competition, because I think Jetty like is gonna throw a bunch, and I hope Kevin throws a bunch, and I just want to see like who throws the most audacious pass, even if they go really bad and like Ante Zizic like drops seven of them. I just want to see them go for it.
It kind of goes back to what, like, I know you're joking, but like it does go back to the fact that like this Cavs team's going to have to be a really good transition team if they want to muster anything close to a league average offense. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's necessarily not going to happen. I think, you know, when we looked at the trades midseason last year that ended up flaming out in the playoffs, Clarkson, Nance, both very, very good transition players. I think Jetty's always going to be a very good transition player, even if it's not always gorgeous because he runs so freaking hard. Sexton projects to be a very good transition player. That was one of one of his real strengths.
Carter, Jetty's going to be gorgeous in transition.
Yeah, continue. You're right. That beautiful son of a bitch. I think that you have the pieces to be a very good transition team. So guys should be looking to leak out, because I think generating those easy offense, I mean, I think if I could bet on this, I would. I guarantee the Cavs are going to be last in points per possession on shots taken with 7 seconds or less left on the shot clock. It's going to be hideous at the end of a shot clock for this team.
One recipient of those full court passes might actually end up being Larry Nance, because that guy gets up and down the floor. And to Carter's point, you didn't see that in the playoffs. And I think the hamstring injury was a big part of that. But he signed an extension today, a front-loaded extension with the intention, as Woj had pointed out, his contract is front-loaded, similar to Kevin Love's, to hopefully give the Cavs some cap flexibility and the ability to at least make a play and add some guys to the LeBron farewell tour when he comes for Era 3.
That's a bleak. That's just like a bleak like thing that could happen.
I mean, it's going to happen. He's going to not be good at that point, but that's okay. But Larry Nance, so he signed an extension. I am pretty okay with this. I feel like if Larry Nance is the player he's been for most of his career, you're not like pulling your hair out over this deal. If he can stay healthy and if he improves, and because I don't think issues with Nance is ever really about what he's physically capable of doing, but I just think there's not the same kind of play recognition, sorry for the voice crack, that you see from like Tristan Thompson on the defensive end. And
we know you get emotional when you talk about Tristan.
I really do. I mean, that beautiful Canadian bastard. But what do you guys like realistically expect from Larry Nance this year? Do Chris, Carter and I have talked about this before, but I want to get your thoughts on kind of the center by committee approach that the Cavs are taking.
I just want to point out one thing about this. For the second time this year, the Cavs had their like a guy that they're putting like as a face of the franchise moving forward sign his contract extension in front of workers at the queue. They did it again.
We gritty as hell
out there, boys.
Like, come on, guys. Like, I get it.
If I come down to Cleveland this year, I'm going to wear a hard hat to a game.
please do. Just like, please.
That's how you know we're blue collar. We're not Hollywood, you know.
Hard workers just putting in at the office and the workshop every day. But
that aren't going to show in TV meetings.
That will all get fired if they unionize.
Facts. Look, Nance is an interesting guy because he's a little bigger this year. Like in person, he looks like a little leaner, and they said he gained about 10 pounds, and he looks just a little like more like he's trying to cope with playing at the five more. Like last year, he talked a lot about how like he had to adjust from like guarding fours to guarding fives, and like it's a more bruising position. So I think that's something to watch. And with him, I have no real expectation that he will do it, because it's talking with like Lakers guys, they've sort of said that the Lakers always said he could shoot and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's like talked about expanding his game, and he took a really bad corner three in preseason, and he took some last year, and he takes them in practice all the time. And I am just not convinced he actually like can do that stuff. But if he can, this contract looks like phenomenal. It looks a lot better in a hurry if he becomes like an actual player who can space a little bit or dribble a little bit. Yeah. But right now he's just sort of useful at what he is, and that's fine. And the center by committee thing is fine too, because I get it. I think it's a smart strategy. I think it's a way to keep, I also think it's a smart way to keep Tristan from not being like upset that he's on the bench on a team that LeBron doesn't play for anymore. Like when you have LeBron, I think it's easier for guys to compartmentalize. Like, I'm going to come off the bench, I'm not going to get as many touches. When he's not there, it's like, well, give me mine. And Tristan is sort of a guy that, you know, with 2 years left on his deal, with, you know, no LeBron, with trying to prove that he's healthy and good again, there's got to be a lot of motivation there for him to prove himself. And if he's at least starting a lot of the time, that helps kind of keep him, the vibe on him a little bit better too. It would be nice if Ante Zizic like could slip into that rotation as a backup, because they think need to see some tape on him. But right now it doesn't seem to be the case. But Nance and Thompson's like not a bad center combo in this NBA if they both stay healthy and both maybe progress in some way.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm still not past the idea of like, I guess now that we have the extension numbers and they're not outrageous, it's not 48, 50, and it is descending, which I think always makes you feel better as a fan, especially like who the hell cares what the Cavs pay him this year or even next year? You know, it's like, it doesn't much matter to the bottom line, but you know, 4 years from now, maybe it does matter. Maybe they need a little extra cap space to get a deal done, because they do have to kind of pay that small market tax or that I don't want to play for Dan Gilbert tax from a free agent. So it does feel a little bit better. It still feels like to some extent this is going to have to come to a head. You can't just play your two. You can't pay your two centers, you know, 35, 40 million a year combined and have each play 24 million or 24 minutes a game. That just feels kind of counterproductive in the modern NBA, especially when you're already playing your pay. Jesus Christ, I can't talk tonight. When you're already paying your power forward a cool 30 million a year, that's all of a sudden a lot of money being allocated to your front court, to your bigs in a league that's getting smaller and smaller. And while there is value to zigging when someone else zags, I do think they're going to have to pick and choose at one point or the other. I don't think it has to be this year, and I don't want it to be this year. But, you know, this kind of lends more credence to my theory that I don't think Tristan's going to be around on this team for his next deal.
Man, I think it's interesting. Like, if Tristan is healthy, it's not like he's much older than Nance, and that's where things
a lot more miles, though.
Mm-hmm. A lot more miles, for sure, but he's also just an effective player, and I think after this season, you're able to like renegotiate an extension with Nance too, or not Nance, Tristan. And if you could get him on a team friendly contract and the understanding is, hey, we're going to keep your minutes down in order to keep you effective. Like that's a guy that I'd want around. Like even if you're talking like $7-8 million a year, over like three more years added on, like I get the value in trying to see what his market is. But I think if you can get him on a team-friendly contract like that, he has value both for you, and then eventually you could revisit what his value is on the trade market. But I just don't think he'd ever get you anything in return close to what value he can bring when he is healthy. Like, I just don't think the market's out there for Tristan right now, especially with teams trying to save their cap room to make a splash this summer.
No, I don't really have any interest in trading Tristan. Now, if a great deal falls into your lap and, you know, like the Raptors or something think like, oh, wow, he's been good up against Horford, maybe, you know, whatever. But good deal.
That would actually make me happy. If you're going to move Tristan, him going to the Raptors would be fantastic. Like, Al Horford might just retire at that point.
Yeah, if someone values him significantly more than the rest of the league does, then sure, you know, maybe a deal can be worked out. But I'm not actively seeking to move him because I don't really think any of those deals exist right now. And as a result, you know, this guy, you know, we talked about I'm not like geeked to move on from JR either, even if I think it's a necessity down the line, because dude wants a title, man. Like,
JR tailgating at Bronze games is something like I'm not ready to give up.
Dude, do you feel like JR's like leaning in a little hard, maybe get back in everyone's good graces this summer?
I think he's going a little over the top to say, hey, look, I'm a team player, in order to facilitate a deal to him going somewhere else.
Lakers buyout market.
That would be truly something if he ended up
on. I would love Josh Hart to get sent to the bench because LeBron wanted them to play JR.
I need that like 1,000-word like Chris Haynes piece just explaining that, and I would just be like, oh, the Lakers fans told me this wasn't going to happen.
Poor Rye as Rondo, Lance, JR, LeBron, and Beasley are out there on the floor.
Because you got to play the vets. Fighting for their playoff lives. I don't know. I actually still think JR can help a contender in a small
verse. I think so too.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he could be in one of those like odious deals. Like, hey, we're going to take on something with a bunch of dead money. But you have to take on JR and you can cut him next year, but maybe he can help you. Like, it's like the equivalent of taking a flyer on him. And getting off some bad money, but maybe giving up a little less to get off that bad money than you would otherwise. But once again, it's just like, I don't know if those deals are materializing. That's kind of why if I'm Kobe Altman, I'm more focused on George Hill's contract and Kyle Korver's contract, which are just imminently more movable and open up a little room in what's kind of a glutted space.
So what percentage do we need to get Jetty Osman's three-point shot to before we move Kyle Korver? Like, I'm assuming it's going to start off at like 38%, and as the weeks progress it just goes up like a half percent. Is like 42% high enough to move Korver, or like, or can we get a little more greedy?
I was so disappointed Jetty underplayed that relationship at media day. I was really I think Spencer Davies asked the question. I'm like, you've been on Twitter, haven't you, Spencer?
Yeah. I think it might be because he's just like a little ashamed that he like Space Jam Korver and like he took it his shooting, and he's feeling a little bit guilty about it. And Korver is going to shoot like 36% on a low percentage, and it's all going to make sense. Who do you guys think, speaking of Jetty and speaking of kind of what to expect here, out of everyone on the team, who do you think you're going to be most pleasantly surprised by? Like, relative to what your expectations for them are, who do you think is most likely to exceed that?
For me, it's Colin Sexton. I just don't have like a great, like, as someone who, I don't know how you guys, that's one of the things I actually don't feel like I have a good grasp on, like how you guys approach them. This, I watched like no college basketball. My like interpretation of Colin Sexton was like when he played in that crazy Alabama game where it was like 3-on-5 or whatever, you know, like that was all I knew about him.
Broadcast by my old network.
Shouts to that. So like I don't have like a great gauge in him. There's some tendencies in him that are a little concerning to me. And I put this in our Fear the Sword like G chat, but like I get like some Alfred Payton vibes, which is like not good, you know? Like that's tough. That's like a bad omen, but
that's just because he got tall hair.
Yeah. Well, you're profiling there. And Payton was sneaky good in the half court last year. Continue.
Don't talk about the Phoenix Suns and like sight.
He's gonna be fine for New Orleans. Continue.
Okay. But like I just feel like he's gonna do some stuff that is like very, very athletically exciting. And he's done a little bit this already. And I don't know like what his reads are gonna look like. I don't know like what his minutes with Clarkson are gonna look like and how that affects him and whatnot. But there are things that I just expect to see him do athletically that get me like more interested in him going forward. And he's just like I feel like my expectations for Jetty are pretty fair. Like I feel like I sort of unless Nance really explodes in some way, I feel like I know what I'm going to get from him. Sexton's the guy that has like the upside and the drive and just like the personality to just be really fun. And I think there's a chance he also just might be kind of good. And I just get the vibe that he's also not going to be on the bench for as long as like some people seem to think.
Yeah, the Tyrod Hill thing feels like it is a little unnecessary.
Tyrod Hill.
Good. That's good work, Justin. That's a plus.
Thank you.
I was actually going to pick Sexton, but in the interest of being interesting, I actually think Rodney Hood. I think that's the guy who I just kind of given up on, like not even like from the perspective of like being a good or bad player, but like from the, like, I'm not going to be interested in this guy anymore.
Right.
And I think he has the chance to, if things bear out the way that he probably wants, to make me care again, to make me invested in whether he re-signs with the team or not. And I've been warming up a little bit to the idea, but he still has to kind of go out and earn it. So, yeah, I think he has the chance to, like, I think I see a world in which I'm like really sad to see him go next year. And I think that's a surprising outcome.
So like when the Kings gave him like $20 million or something absurd.
Yeah.
You're going to be sad.
Yeah. It could be one of those weird ones where it's like, are they really going to bring him back? But
yeah. Do you think they're really going to give that kind of money to a shooting guard when they have Scalabissier playing there? Like there's just, there's so much potential there with this five center thing they want to go with. I think Sexton might be the most accurate answer, but again, like Carter, I'm going to try to be interesting and go elsewhere. Larry Nance was a guy I was thinking of because I don't have, like, I like him, but my expectations for him are pretty reasonable. But I think I might actually go with Tristan because I've just been kind of tempering my expectations with him just because of how bad his health was basically since February 2017. And I think if he's really healthy, we were seeing after the title, like that first 3 months there was the best season of his career. Like he was showing a lot of growth. And I think there's a real opportunity for him to kind of blossom here. The only other guy I can think of, depending on where people are at, I think with Cavs fans, if I had to guess, it's going to be with Jordan Clarkson. Because I think the playoff performance is just so ingrained in people's minds. And in a season where there's probably not going to be a lot of wins, there's going to be those kind of flourishes of Clarkson scoring. And it's not going to be super efficient, as Chris has alluded to. But on those nights where he's hot, I think it's going to at least be fun to watch. And in a season where it's possible that they make playoffs and it's probably more likely that they don't, if it's the latter scenario, I think that he's a guy that can kind of be a bit of a bright spot, at least from an entertainment standpoint.
Are you guys, would you guys be like upset if he stays on the bench beyond, let's say, Thanksgiving?
What do you mean?
Sexton? Like,
Sexton?
Yeah. Let's say like,
you met Jordan Clarkson. I thought Chris was sitting there being like, wow, you know what, Justin, you make some good points. Let's start him.
No, I'm just going to like move past Jordan Clarkson because like here's my thing with Clarkson. Like he does some things like interestingly and some things that are like useful. But I just like my concern with him is I wonder if Ty is going to like lean on that too much, you know? That's my concern. But like, like just and with like the concerns we all have of like pairing Sexton with Clarkson, like would you be upset if it's like December 1st and Sexton's like still coming off the bench playing like a lot of his minutes with like let's say Sam Decker and Jordan Clarkson?
Yeah, I guess like I guess those are two different questions though, right? Like I guess I don't really care if he's still coming off the bench if they're being smart about their lineup usage. And they're subbing like him and Korver at the 6 minute mark, you know, like that's fine. But if they're playing, you know, platoon ass basketball with a bunch of losers that can't space for him, then yeah, I'll be mad. So I guess my opinion is as variable as Tyronn Lue's rotation decisions. I think he'll put him in a spot to succeed. Maybe he won't. The whole way they handled preseason was kind of weird. I talked about this on Tom Valentino's pod, Nail in the Coffin. Did you feel like they treated preseason like they were still good?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they're not, so they shouldn't do that. Like,
I don't know. They just went 2-0 against Celtics, Carter. I think Tristan has a point.
Tristan, still favorites in the East. Got to respect it.
I love that the Celtics still hate them.
Oh, I love that they still hate the Celtics. It's great. No, it was the reason. It's actually my friend Nate, who I had on for our gambling podcast. He's betting the Cavs under in part because he thinks there's just enough leftover pieces that people are going to, that the other East powers are really going to relish beating the shit out of the Cavs.
Yeah, that's certainly when I heard that
it's not a terrible point.
I was like, yeah, you kind of got a bit of a point. Like Toronto is definitely just going to, I think the season opener could get ugly in a hurry. And I also think there's the possibility that you just kind of have one of those weird opening nights, like where the Cavs lost to the Knicks on opening night LeBron first came back.
I hope they're too hyped.
I really hope that that's what happens because the Cavs beating Toronto on opening night would just, That would give us jokes for a while.
Chef's and kiss.
It would just be perfect. And Kawhi doesn't seem to have his jumper yet, so maybe there's some hope, but that's still a pretty goddamn good team. I think in terms of whether or not I'd be disappointed if Sexton was still on the bench. Basically, the only player I don't want him playing with is Jordan Clarkson. So as long as those guys are staggered, I think I'm going to be okay because that's just not a combination that I think works in any way, shape, or form.
I think that's fair. I don't – the preseason gave me, like, no actual, like, read on what Ty's going to do, which is, like, kind of weird. But I also, like – I get why he did it. And I'm sure Kevin Love was like, Ty, like I'm really not trying to play like four preseason games, like come on. But I also, and it, like there's a lot of little injuries, right? Like Nance had the ankle injury, Jetty had the ankle issue, like there's little stuff that's nicked up that I think prevented us from like actually understanding a little bit more. But that's what the regular season's for. Preseason basketball is kind of pointless.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into some actual predictions here before we wrap things up. I was thinking of maybe doing most disappointing, but I think we've kind of sprinkled that opinion in throughout here. Like I think we all are low on Sam Decker. I think it's pretty clear Chris is very not high on Jordan Clarkson, and I think let's just all say it's Sam Decker. But in terms of predictions, Chris, we'll start with you as our guest, as a courtesy, not because you're special to us or anything. What do you think is going to happen this season? Paint us the story of the Cavs this year.
I think they're going to be more fun than I think people think. I think you're going to have, and even then, I think I'm in the course of this like podcast series, I think I've been fairly pessimistic, which is not great, but I think they're going to be fun. I think you're going to have some like really just like interesting things. I think the personalities on the teams are going to be really good. I think you're going to have like big important learning years for these young guys. I also think they're going to be bad. It's something we haven't talked about on either of these two shows. I think they're like defensively, they're going to be atrocious. I just can't find out a way. I cannot like figure out a way that team can put together a good defense. I think they're going to just struggle in that regard. I think the offense is going to get wild sometimes and that's going to look really uncomfortable. At the same time, I think they're going to be trying to win, which is more than you could say about a lot of the other teams in the East. And I think ultimately they're going to miss the playoffs. I think they're not going to be quite at the bottom of the league where they're in a position to get a top five pick, but they're going to be, I think, you know, firmly behind some of these teams in the East and just in this weird spot where they get another 7-8 pick and really, I think, have to nail it. Would it shock me if they made the playoffs? No, but I think a lot has to go right for that to happen. So I'm going to say, you know, something like the end of is the 7th or 8th worst team in the league.
Man, I was depressed. Carter, go on.
You know, I think that this team is going to win 30, 31 games. I think they're going to be more fun than most 30, 31 win teams. I think there's going to be extended stretches of not fun. And I think seeing how this team responds to those stretches of adversity will go a long way to determining how much fun we have as fans. I think there's always going to be people that are miserable. There's always going to be people that are having too much fun, or not even that, are just too like responsive to that criticism where they go the other way.
Right.
But ultimately, I think this is going to be a slightly below average experience for Cavs fans, but not as bad as people think it's going to be. I think there is, you know, as frustrating as goalpost moving is in an argument, it's actually really helpful for a fan base going through a downturn with their team. Because we're moving the goalpost a little bit closer. And as long as the Cavs get close to our expectations, we'll be happy.
Yeah, I'm probably similar to the same point you guys are at. One thing, Chris, you need to remember, though, is with the new lottery odds, even if they are like the 6th worst record, they still have like a pretty decent shot at a top pick. So I'm hoping for lotto luck, because I don't think they're going to be like a bottom 3 team in terms of record, but I think they could fall anywhere from like 4 to 7 there. I think you're going to get about 28 wins. I'm not as low on their defense as you. I think they're probably going to fall into like the 18-19 range, but I think there's going to be times, especially if they are shutting Kevin Love down, if he's getting nicked up or anything like that, where this offense is just abysmal. But I think in the stretches where they have everybody and things are clicking, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think they're going to fail trying things, which is more fun than failing to not try. And I mean, as Chris said, them trying is something that you can't say a lot of other teams do consistently, but you can't even say that the Cavs have done that consistently over the last few years. And the regular season just hasn't been a lot of fun. So I think it's going to be a much more fun year. I think I'm probably the highest out of you two in terms of the odds of making the playoffs, but ultimately I just don't think that that's truly the Cavs' objective this season. So
here's a question. Are the Cavs more Pacers or more Nets?
I hope Nets. Like, that's what I'm hoping for.
I think
are they more Hornets?
I think they're more Hornets.
Yeah, they're probably
that's more Hornets. That's the correct way to put it. Like, if things break right, they might make the playoffs. They probably won't, though.
Yeah, and if they start unloading the vets, I just don't think it's going to be that great. And if they play Sam Decker a lot, I think that's a way to sneakily tank. Maybe they're trying to trick Kevin into thinking they're winning. Who knows? Anyways, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. If you guys are listening strictly to our podcast, you can also check out part 1 to get more of your preview fill on Locked On Cavs. You can read all 3 of us at Fear the Sword. Remember, leave a rating, leave a review. It's the best way to support both of our shows. And if you want a part of our Cavs Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review that you left for us to chasedownpod@gmail.com. And we would be more than happy to send you a link to that chat.
Doing giveaways.
Yes, we are doing giveaways. We've been doing some giveaways lately. We won't go into too much detail about what those are, but they've been pretty sweet. I think everybody in there is pretty happy right now. So thanks again to our listeners. Thank you so much to Chris Manning for coming on. Thank you for Carter for putting up with me, as well as putting together a very entertaining podcast last week there with Nate Jacobson. Check that out if you guys haven't already, the Gambling Podcast, talking about over and under lines. So we appreciate all of your support. We'll be recapping game 1. Until next time, go Cavs.